Today on Family Talk. Welcome to today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Jim Veldheis, and I'm in the studio with psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. Doctor, it's March Madness, and we're airing part two of a classic broadcast.
Well, the man we're going to hear from again today is an individual who finished well to his last breath. We're going to hear the words of Coach John Wooden from UCLA, who went on to be with the Lord at the age of 99, and he left a legacy that is as rich and meaningful as any that we could ever aspire to. I got acquainted with him near the end of his life. I had an opportunity to interview him, and what a delightful man he was. Everybody loved John Wooden who knew him. It's interesting. We developed quite a friendship, and he sent me a basketball that he had signed, and he forgot it. And he sent me a second one, and then he forgot that and sent me a third. So I've got three basketballs signed by John Wooden, and I'm proud of every single one of them. At the beginning of the recorded conversation that we're going to hear today, which is part two of our discussion together, he was one of the winningest coaches in basketball history there at UCLA, and he's been honored in so many ways. In 2003, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the nation's highest civilian honor. President George W. Bush remarked that, quote, "Coach Wooden remains a part of our lives as a teacher of the game and as an example of what a good man should be." And I echo those words today. And even though he's now gone, those words are still with us, and we're going to hear some of them today. So, Jim, with that, bring the program on and let our listeners hear part two of a two-part interview that we recorded together in 2003.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. You know, though the program's a few years old, the wisdom shared by Coach Wooden holds true still today. We hope you find it as encouraging and inspiring as it was the first time it was aired. And now here's part two of that classic broadcast with Dr. James Dobson and Coach John Wooden.
You have, for many years, been speaking on an idea that you have wanted to convey to young people throughout a good part of your professional career. Describe it for us.
Well, in my early years of teaching, I became a little bit disappointed at what I thought parents of youngsters in my English classes expected from their youngsters. And if they didn't get an A or B, I found many parents thought that that either the youngster had failed or the teacher had failed. And I didn't like that way of judging at all. I didn't think that was fair, because the good Lord in His infinite wisdom didn't create us all equal as intelligence is concerned, any more than we're equal as far as size or appearance, or we're not come to the same environments, etc. And I wanted to come up with something else. I wanted to coin my own definition, which would be a little different from Mr. Webster's. Mm-hmm. And I thought this could help me become a better teacher and give the youngsters under my supervision something to which to aspire, other than just higher marks in the classroom or more points in some athletic endeavor. And I thought about this, and several things came to mind. One was my father saying, never try to be better than somebody else and never cease trying to be the best you can be. And then a class, a discussion of success that I recalled some years before. Then I ran across a simple verse that said, at God's footstool to confess, a poor soul knelt and bowed his head. I failed, he cried. The master said, thou didst thy best. That is success. I like that. Hmm. And I think that is when you individually know you did your best. So from that, I coined my own definition of success, which is peace of mind attained only through self-satisfaction in knowing you made the effort to do the best of which you're capable. Nobody else knows that but you, because you can fool everybody else. And but that wasn't serving the purpose for which I had hoped. And so I tried to wonder what I could do. And I came to the conclusion, after analyzing it a bit, that if I could come up with something you could see. And here again, like so many things, popped out from the hidden recesses of the mind, something that I'd seen years before called a ladder of achievement. Somebody had taken a ladder, five rungs on the ladder, and they had named each rung of the ladder some particular trait or characteristic that this individual felt was necessary to get to the top of the ladder, where we'd all like to get. We might differ in what we consider at the top of the ladder to be, but we'd like to get there. And there's nothing wrong with ambition as long as it's kept under control. And that gave me an idea of a pyramid. Mm-hmm. And I worked on that for the next 14 years. I placed
pyramid of success.
Mm-hmm. I placed my definition of success at the apex and then started working from the bottom. And the first two blocks I ever chose were the cornerstones, industriousness and enthusiasm. And they are essential.
Now, you have a training program for young people that's being used all across the country and has been for a number of years. That incorporates that.
Yes, sir.
And the name of the training program is?
I'm doing it with Mr. Guerin, and it is the John R. Whitten course. I guess that's what it's called.
And it consists of materials, videos?
And yes, and all from the pyramid.
All from the
and
pyramid.
Different things from there.
Yeah.
I spoke to the players one time at the beginning of the year on the pyramid. I took some time and explained each block and talked to them one time. And then I would say, any of you want to come in and talk to me about it, fine. And some did and some didn't. But there's hardly a player that played for me that years after they've graduated haven't said that they didn't. Well, let me give you an example. Lewis Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, just recently on a interview, the interviewer asked him, what do you think about Coach Wooden's pyramid? And he said, when I came to school, I thought it was the corniest thing I'd ever seen. He said, before I got out of school, I saw it was kind of meaningful. But I never realized how much until a number of years after I was out of school. And that's come from a lot of the players. And that sort of pleases me. It's what happens to them afterwards. I like Amos Alonzo Stagg. Most of you probably never heard of Amos Alonzo Stagg. He was a great football coach when the University of Chicago had outstanding football teams. And after one fine year, a reporter said, well, Coach Stagg, is this your finest year? And he said, I won't know for 25 or 30 years. In other words, more concerned what's going to happen to all those under his supervision after they're gone than right at the moment. I've always liked that statement.
You have had a lifelong love for the Bible. That came from your father, I believe.
Yes, I think so.
You still read it and study it?
Yes, I do.
Is it still meaningful to you? Does it still speak to you?
Indeed.
You carry a cross with you.
I do.
You have it with you today?
I do.
Could I see it?
Yes. It was given to me by my minister in South Bend, Indiana, when I enlisted in the service. And I've got some other little things here, too.
Yeah.
And then another cross.
Uh-huh. Is that money or is that something else?
Just a little came from Rome. This is the one that my minister gave me. It has Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. And it has the heart and the monad.
Why do you carry it? I think I know, but tell us.
Give me peace. I had that in my hand all the basketball games, and I think they didn't know it, but I think officials should have been happy that I had that in my hand.
And you have carried it virtually every day?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've had it.
It's all these years. It's worn down. How long have you been carrying it?
Well, I had it since 1942 is when I was given to me, and the heart and the monad and the Alpha and the Omega are almost faded out. You can still see them, but they're still there. I've never seen another one like it, and I like that. Never got another one in the pocket I carry, but it's not like that, and it's not that meaningful.
You have indicated that you're still trying to grow, still trying to learn.
Yes, I think we should be every day. When you're through learning, you're through. I think that's true. I think that was, I think when I was teaching, I think I hope in 1975 I was a little better than I was in 74. And I know I was a lot better than I was in 1934. But I hope each year I was a little better than I was the year before. There's always different ways of learning, maybe not in certain techniques, but there are other things. most important probably is learning to work and listen to other people.
When you would greet a new team with a lot of freshmen, and you had to start from scratch, where'd you begin? What'd you say to them on the first day?
Well, the first day of practice or the first day I met with them?
Yeah, either one.
Well, I want to get across to them that the first thing that is that defense usually wins championships, and it's been an absolute disgrace. If any of you are a good offensive player and you're not a good defensive player, that's disgraceful. Now, a good defensive player might not be a good offensive player, and I understand that, but offensively, you better be a good defensive player. I want you to remember that. Now, offensively, I want you to know that I want most of our baskets to come at the end of a pass, not the end of a dribble. And here we permit no behind-the-back passing, no behind-the-back dribbling, no fancy stuff. If you want that, we'll try to get you a job at the Globetrotters, or you can go someplace else.
No showboating.
No showboating. I want them to understand that. But I want them to understand that two-thirds of our practice throughout the entire year will be individual fundamental drills, and a third will be on trying to bring the individuals together in the team concept, and we must always think of the team first.
If you had a player whom you suspected was trying to put numbers up for himself, even though he was helping the team, what would you do?
Oh, I had the greatest ally in the world, the bench.
And we'll be back to the program right after this.
I've always loved the game of basketball, even though I've never been particularly skilled at it. But a few years ago, at age 50, I had the opportunity of a lifetime. My friends and I had gone to a conference in Laguna, California, which is a beach town populated mostly by surfers and sun worshipers. During an afternoon break, someone suggested that four of us old guys go down to the outdoor basketball court on the beach and challenge the young hotshots that play there. It was a stupid thing to do, but off we went. When we arrived, about 300 spectators surrounded the court, where four-man teams waited to take their turn at the reigning champs. Well, we got in line, and rumors began to spread immediately about who these old dudes really were. Some thought we were NBA scouts, checking out the talent. Others thought we were coaches from USC or UCLA. As for me, I've never been so nervous in my life as I waited to play the champs. But we finally stepped on the court, and the impossible happened. We got hot and we hit everything we shot. Within 2 minutes, we were up 8-0. The crowd went crazy as people began to come from everywhere on the beach. Only three more buckets and we would have pulled off the upset of the century. But then reality set in and we lost 11-8. Alas, athletic immortality often hangs by the slenderest thread. I missed it by three lousy buckets. How close have you come?
And now, back to the program.
Well, I've often said that the two most important words in the language are love and balance. And two of my bookcases at home, one is love and the other one's balance, and the third one is drink deeply from good books, especially the Bible. There are three of the bookcases that I have. And I do believe that love, I mean true love, lasting, not passion, love. Passion is temporary. Love is enduring. And that is the most important way, and it can be shown in many ways. What is it in my book, Inch and Miles for Children? Charlie the Chimp is on friendship, and it ends something like, to be a friend, it's plain to see that you yourself, a friend, must be. And love is indicated in that. Let's see, there's another one. A bell isn't a bell until you ring it. A song isn't a song until you sing it. And the love that is in us wasn't put there to stay. Love isn't love till you give it away. True love. And then the next one is balance. You have to keep things in proper perspective. Don't let things get out of perspective. And that is done too much. Keep things in proper perspective regarding in your profession. I talk about, I use at times I say family, faith, and friends, and I say that's wrong, but I think he'll understand. It should be faith, family, and friends. They're the three important things. The three important things. If you have those, I'd like to know what else you need.
Freedom. Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. But with faith, family, and friends, with faith, I kind of think you have freedom.
When your life is over, how do you want to be remembered? What we've talked about today are the things that we remember about you and admire you for. What do you want to be remembered for? As the coach that won 10 national championships?
I'd like to be remembered as just someone who was considerate of other people. That'd be enough.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. While we're off here, I don't know if they've heard about this fellow was going through the cemetery reading all the inscriptions. You know, that's where you find the perfect people. Just read the inscriptions. You'll find they're all perfect. One fellow came to one and said, "As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, you are sure to be. So may I say, as here I lie, prepare yourself to follow me." And somebody had scratched under that, "To follow you, I'm not content until I know which way you went."
Yeah. You know where I read that?
Where?
It was a little earlier than what you just read and talked about. Shirley and I last summer were in Rome, mm-hmm. and there is the Capuchin monk's house of bones. Mm-hmm. And this is a monastery which is filled with the skeletons of the monks. Mm-hmm. And when you come out, I mean, there were, it's all over the ceiling and the walls and everywhere. The clock is made out of fingers bones. The skulls are on the roofs. A really kind of a spooky place. And as you're coming out of it, there's that little note that says, that, "Where you are, we once were, and where we are, you will be." And it was that same, and that was from the 1500s. So we scooped you a little bit there. Yep.
Well, did they have the one in there that said, "When you get to heaven, you will likely view many persons whose presence there will be a shock to you. But don't look surprised. Don't you even stare. Doubtless there'll be many folks surprised to see you there." Did they have that one?
You look forward to seeing the Lord someday?
Of course I do.
Yeah, we're going to be together through eternity. That's kind of exciting. Would you take a little time when we get there to teach me to shoot? I have the perfect poem here on which to end our conversation. This was written by you, Coach Wooden, and the title of it is "Do Not Look Back." I'm going to read it. "The years have left their imprint on my hands and on my face. Erect no longer is my walk, and slower is my pace. But there is no fear within my heart because I'm growing old. I only wish I had more time to further serve my Lord. When I've gone to Him in prayer, He has brought me inner peace, and soon my cares and worries and all other troubles cease. He has blessed me in so many ways. He has never let me down. Why should I fear the future when I soon may touch His crown? Though I know down here my time is short, there's endless time up there, and He will forgive and keep me forever in His loving care. May I not waste an hour that's left to glorify His name, of the One who died that we may live, and for our sins took all the blame." Isn't that beautiful?
What a meaningful poem penned by the late John Wooden. That text is available at drjamesdobson.org. It would be a great piece to link to and post on your Facebook page to encourage your friends and your family. Dr. Dobson, the coach's words there at the end of your conversation really are made more meaningful now by the fact that he's gone on to be with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his biography and his list of accomplishments are just unprecedented over his 27-year career at UCLA. He won 620 games, including 88 straight wins during one historic stretch, and he coached many of the game's greatest players, some of whom went on to have magnificent careers in the NBA. We also heard him talk about his curricular courses and something that he called the Pyramid of Success. Those ideas are still influential, especially among people who are in leadership positions. Speaking of leaders, that's exactly what John Wooden was. You know, character is at the heart of leadership, and let me share a clip that demonstrates the depth of Coach Wooden's character as he handled racial issues on a team he coached.
You may have heard something. When I was teaching at Indiana State University, I was there 2 years. In my first year, we were invited to the national NAI tournament. I had one black player on my team. He didn't get to play very much. He was perhaps, I had a 12-man squad. He probably played the least of any of the 12 players. But he was a member of the squad, and I refused to go because they wouldn't let him go. Well, the next year, we had a better year. I think we finished 29-4, something like that. And we invited again, and I refused. And then his parents, and I think it was the NAACP, talked to the people of the university, the president and so on, and they thought it'd be nice if he could go. They agreed to let him play, but he couldn't stay in the hotel. We could have meals in the hotel as long as we had a private dining room. And I said no. But eventually I was persuaded, and he stayed with the minister and his wife while we were there, and no problems in any way. He didn't get to play very much, but that was a breakthrough. And
what year would that have been?
That would be 1948.
How disgraceful when you think about mm-hmm. it.
And a few years later, an all-black team happened to win that NAIA tournament. But I never had any problem with racial relationships. And anyway, I'm very proud of, after one championship game, one of my black players and a reporter in my presence said, tell me about your racial problems. And he straightened up. You don't know our coach, do you? He doesn't see racial problems. He sees ball players. And he turned, walked away from the reporter, and that pleased me. That pleased me. That pleased me about as much as anything could have pleased me.
You were known then for being colorblind, and you were.
Well, I'd like to think I was without prejudice, but I can't say that. I'm not sure anyone is completely without prejudice, but I like to feel I was.
I mean, you said you had some of the greatest black players in the history of the game.
I did.
I remember Sidney Wicks, and that team won 1 year. See, I was following you. You didn't know that, but I was on the other side of town watching you.
You can find out more about Coach Wooden's leadership course at our website, drjamesdobson.org. It's called the John R. Wooden Course. It's for families, coaches, corporations. You know, Doctor, one way or another, all of us can learn something from that course. The discussion that we heard today was recorded when Coach Wooden was 93 years old, and I've heard that he maintained his strong mental acuity all the way up to the time that he passed away when he was 99 years old. He was survived by his son, his daughter, 3 grandsons, 4 granddaughters, and 13 great-grandchildren. What a life he lived, and I pray that all the listeners will not only take to heart the wisdom that we heard today from Coach Wooden, but maybe take a moment to step back and think about your own legacy that you're leaving behind. You know, all of us make a mark of some sort on the people around us, on our family, on our friends, on our workplaces, and it behooves us, I think, to just pause every now and then to consider the importance of finishing well. And Coach Wooden did finish well, passing away at the ripe old age of 99. Doctor, before we go, let me tell our listeners how they could get a copy of this program and pass along Coach Wooden's amazing wisdom to friends, family, people they know, even coworkers. Call us and get the details at 877-732-6825 or go online to drjamesdobson.org and download this program and share it with everyone you know would benefit from this timeless wisdom. And we've got another source of timeless wisdom we'd like to share with you. Now, most of you know that Shirley Dobson has been the chair of the National Day of Prayer Task Force for 25 years, so she knows more than anyone else about mobilizing groups and individuals to pray effectively. She's written a very helpful book called Certain Peace in Uncertain Times, which helps readers to nurture a true and lasting lifestyle of prayer. This biblically sound resource will motivate and encourage you to communicate daily with God, not because you ought to, but because you want to. The powerful book is available for any donation of $50 or more to the work of Family Talk. You'll enrich your prayer life and help us continue to stand for truth in the culture. Call us at 877-732-6825 or donate online at drjamesdobson.org. And be sure to tune in next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.